It's another weird Wednesday, 5 p.m., time for American Hit Radio, WHPC 90.3 from Nassau Community College. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, lovely wife, co-host, Heidi Morales-Ryan, here as well to keep me straight. And, of course,
keep you on the straight and narrow, that is.
What's that?
Keep you on the straight and narrow.
That's right. Well, as usual, I intend to play an album in its entirety during today's show. We've been going back and forth between the top 500 of the top 40 and the alternative top 40, moving through two lists of 500 albums each. Obviously, that's a total of 1,000 I'm hoping to cover. That's a 20-year project. But but at this point, we're already up to October. We started in chronologically with albums that were released in January of 1964. And we are now up to October of 1969. So we're moving along at a fairly decent clip. And it's fun to do this, really, because what I hope you're hearing as we do this album by album is this sense of progression, how music begins to change, which is what we do on Fridays. It's called How Music Changed, what we do then. But it's sort of the same thing here when we do this, because one thing leads to another, and then this has progressed to that stage and everything else. It, like, for example, if you were playing like from the Beatles' first album in 1964, and then recently we played Abbey Road, that is quite a change. And in those 5 years or 6 years in that time span, that's exactly what we have been doing and conveying. You know, we played Abbey Road not that long ago, really, just a few weeks ago. Last week we played Led Zeppelin's second album. And today we play another signpost album. It's titled In the Court of the Crimson King, the very first album that was ever released by King Crimson. Now, if you're not familiar with the band, I will say this. You need to be careful with King Crimson. Wading through their catalog is like swimming with sharks or like playing with a prickly pear. First of all, it's enormous. They've got a truckload of live collections, multi-disc releases. For example, I mean, this album itself, In the Court of the Crimson King, is available now. If you want, you can buy a 5-CD set.
Version of it. Wow.
5 CDs plus a sixth disc for a DVD. It's crazy. But you know, more than that, more than the quantity, is the music itself, which is usually in their catalog, an incredibly tangled web of cranial rhythmic ideas welded to obscure lyrics that make them really probably one of the most dense bands in the history of rock and roll. Their reputation as the godfathers of progressive rock is certainly well-deserved. And here, with this album, is where it all started. This is their debut album, released by King Crimson. And it didn't stay here for long. It didn't stay in this format for long. By their second album, this band was already beginning, for the most part, dispersed. So where they started has got very little to do with where they ultimately ended up. The one thing that's been in common for every King Crimson project is the name Robert Fripp. He is the only continual member of the band. However, on the first album, this album that we're going to be covering today, he was neither the most important member, so to speak. He wasn't a songwriter much. Most of the stuff was written by the keyboardist and woodwinds player, Ian MacDonald. And the lyrics were written by a non-playing member of the band, Peter Sinfield. Fripp more or less, though, controlled the band one way or another, if not musically, certainly emotionally. And that's pretty much why, ultimately, the other band members would begin to move on and Fripp would inherit the band and basically do with it as he pleased, through a whole variety of changes. It's an amazingly interesting and convoluted path that this band has trod. But everybody's got to start somewhere, And this is where King Crimson started, with the album, actually, that is probably, almost certainly, their most popular album, their very first album. And it remains so to this day. This is considered by many to be the very first true progressive rock album. Now, what makes that to be the case is that this is the first album that, a British album that deliberately departs from the blues influences that have pretty much influenced every single rock and roll album up until this point. You can say that rock and roll has got, whether it's country or whatever else, has always been a little bit of American blues influence on just about every single thing that was coming out of Great Britain, maybe with the distinct exception of pure pop music. So this is the first time that you've got a band, a heavy band, a rock band, that was avoiding the blues entirely and instead focusing on elements of jazz, time signature changes, classical music, and even symphonic music. This is one of the first bands that started to steadily utilize synthesizers, although they did get that idea mostly from the Moody Blues. That's why sometimes people say the Moody Blues, that was the first progressive album. That was the first push in this direction, but this is the one that really fulfills what the term, what progressive rock has come to mean. So let's start. Let's dive right in. In the Court of the Crimson King is the name of the album. Most of the songs are fairly long, so you have to let that unfold as they do. The first track is titled 21st Century Schizoid Man. I'll see you in 7.5 minutes. back in the 20th century, you could certainly say that we had never heard anything quite like 21st century Schizoid Man when it was released. It was monstrous.
Absolutely.
Scared a lot of people to death with the instrumentation and the musicality of the band. It's basically at the start of like show-off rock, you know, like don't try this at home, folks, sort of music. And it was incredible. The cover of the album, which shows a wide-nostrilled face of a man with his mouth open where you can actually see his tonsils and his eyes like shifted
cross-eyed
to the side.
Right?
Just shifting to the side as though he is in a state of absolute fear of something that is coming at him, is a painting of the 21st century Schizoid Man. That's what it was intended to be, as done by Barry Godber. Apparently it was a painting that I think it was Peter Sinfield had found it and brought it in, and the band was like, "Oh, this is awesome! That's going to be our album cover," and it's what it was. The band, by the way, consisted of Robert Fripp, Michael Giles, a drummer who was left over from Fripp's previous band, Giles and Fripp. Maybe we'll have time to discuss that a little bit. We'll see. Greg Lake on lead vocals and bass guitar. This is where he came from when he jumped ship soon after this album. The next project was the supergroup. You've heard of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Well, they formed Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. It's getting to be a thing.
ELP.
Yes. Ian McDonald plays just about every instrument on the planet on this record. And like I said, Peter Sinfield didn't play anything, but he's responsible for writing all of the lyrics. Also handled the band's lighting when they played live. It's a rather unusual credit. All right, let's move on and play the next track. This is called I Talk to the Wind.
Said the straight man to the late man, where have you been? I've been here and I've been there and I've been in between. I talk to the wind. The wind does not hear. to the late man, where have you been? I've been here and I've been there and I've been in between.
Is one of the more quiet, reflective songs on the album called I Talk to the Wind. I mentioned that the main songwriters of the band were Ian McDonald and Peter Sinfield. That was one of theirs. There's only five songs on the album, three of them credited to the entire band. So I guess that's their way of tip of the hat to Robert Fripp for his input, like the craziness of 21st century schizoid man. But I Talk to the Wind is the sound of Sinfield and McDonald working alone. The group came together in a pretty natural way. There were two brothers named Michael Giles and Peter Giles who were trying to put a band together. They had both been professional musicians for a while, and that's Michael Giles on drums in this version of the band. He's an astounding drummer. It's kind of sad that he didn't hang around and do much else, you know, that made him famous, because his playing on this record is stunning. Anyway, the two brothers put an ad to see if they could, one played bass, one played drums. They figured that what they really needed to round out their sound was an organist who could sing. So that's why Robert Fripp answered the ad. He's a guitar player and he doesn't sing at all. But it didn't matter. They thought that he was a good fit, so they hired him. So they were a trio for a while called Giles, Giles, and Fripp that got nowhere. And eventually they realized that maybe they really should get around to getting that organist that they wanted in the first place. So they brought in Ian McDonald, who besides playing keyboards, organ, he soon fattened that out into harpsichord, mellotron, vibraphone, a lot of other things. And he plays woodwinds, saxophone, flute, clarinet, etc. So he was a good find. It also so happened that his girlfriend was Judy Dibel. You might remember her, maybe, as the first singer of the band Fairport Convention. She was their lead singer on their debut album before Sandy Denny took her place. But she didn't last long in this group either. Eventually, the two broke up. So when they broke up, she went her way. McDonald stayed. And then McDonald, after he came in and was the fourth member, said, maybe you guys could, you know, I have this guy, Peter Sinfield, who I write songs with. So how about we bring him into the group? So although he didn't play an instrument, he came along as the lyricist. And like I said, and a roadie and the guy who handled all their lights in concert. All right, let's play another track then. This would be the last song of Side One. It's called Epitaph. I'll see you in about 8 minutes and 50 seconds. Mm-hmm.
is cracking at the seams upon
I feel.
summer sun thank you.
Strange, almost peaceful number. Very odd, though, in comparison to the first track that we started out with. That was called Moonchild. A long track, the longest track on the album, actually, at a little bit over 12 minutes, that followed the track Epitaph before that. Playing our way through the entire album in the Court of the Crimson King. Pretty much the birth of progressive rock happening right here on this album. Peter Sinfield, the non-playing member of the band, the lyricist, described the band like this. It's pretty funny. If it sounded at all popular, it was out.
Wow.
So it had to be complicated. It had to be more expansive chords. It had to have strange influences. If it sounded like too simple, we'd deliberately make it more complicated. We'd play it in 7/8 or 5/8 just to show off. Like I said, it's definitely like sort of show off music in a sense. By the way, Last week, I mentioned that there is a new show that will be debuting here on WHPC. Well, that time is coming up in just about 10 minutes. A program called The Classic Countdown, hosted by Zach Turkel, will be starting right after American Hit Radio. His slot will be Wednesdays at 6 p.m. What Zach is intending to do is he's going to be basically what I do in a way, but with this is give everybody a trip back in time so you can listen to some of the biggest hits of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He's going to be playing pop songs from the Billboard charts, singles, for whatever that current week is. It'll be an anniversary show for hit singles from a year that Zach picks. Coming up, I happen to know that he will be playing songs from this week in 1971, 47 years ago. So tune in, check it out. The cool new show here on WHPC, something that fits well with American Hit Radio. So I'm glad to welcome Zach, and I wish him luck with his program. Meanwhile, I got one more thing to play, a song that has absolutely nothing to do with the biggest hits, because this is a pretty weird album. Although the album did do well. I should have mentioned that. This album, Court of the Crimson King, here in America, charted at number 28.
We had it at our house.
You do?
Yes.
So there you go. See, it was a popular album, even though it was as weird as can be. It did well. This is why it's our album number 82 in our top 500 of the top 40. Meanwhile, one more song that was written exclusively by Ian McDonald and Peter Sinfield happens to be the title song of the album, The Court of the Crimson King. Take care, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the program and stay tuned for Zach's Classic Countdown coming up next. See you on Friday.
Shattered by the sun, I walk a road, horizons change, the tournament's begun. The purple piper plays his tune, the choir softly sing. Three lullabies in an ancient tongue for the court of the crimson. Shutters on the dreams, I wait outside the pilgrim's door with insufficient schemes. The black queen chants the funeral march, the cracked brass bells will ring to summon back the fire witch to the court of the crimson. Thank you. trampling on a flower. I chase the wind of a prison ship to taste the sweet and sour. The pattern juggler lifts his hand, the orchestra begin. As slowly turns the grinding wheel in the court of the crimson. But gently pulls the strings. He smiles as the puppets dance in the court of the crimson.